Everybody, just a quick note before we jump into this week's episode. Tom and I were on location, so that meant we were actually in a school talking to fellow teacher. And in the background, there were a bunch of very enthusiastic students getting ready for an event that they were planning for the evening. So their excitement breaks into the podcast here and there. Hopefully it won't distract you too much, but I just wanted to give you a heads up. Anyway, let's get into it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Teachers in the Dungeon. I'm Tom Gross with...
He's indicating me. I'm Dan.
You're supposed to say, I'm Dan Ream.
Well, you gotta warn
except,
me.
I'm not Dan Ream, you're Dan Ream.
Change the whole script on me here.
If I don't keep you on your toes, you'll get content, and then the goblins will sneak up on you, and then it's all over.
Well, I was prepared to say we got moved to a different cell in the dungeon.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. It's a small cell.
Yes.
It's a warm cell.
But it's away from all of our tech.
Yeah, it is.
So
it is.
You may notice a slight difference in voice quality here today, folks. But
yeah, we've got
it's still us.
We've got a great show, I believe. We're going to talk to Nate Sidwell, who's a world language teacher, and talk about how he uses RPGs in the classroom. But before we get to that, I just wanted to say, if you are returning to Teachers in the Dungeon, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for joining us. If you are brand new to the show, hey, thanks for checking us out, and we hope you come back to the dungeon again. You can join the conversation on the socials. Facebook and Instagram are Teachers in the Dungeon, and Twitter is, X is at Dungeon Teachers. We also have the YouTube channel, and if you want to send us a longer note, teachersinthedungeon@gmail.com.
That's pretty good.
Thanks. I didn't have that written down or anything.
Doubly impressed now.
Thank you. All right. Well, don't want to spend any more time delaying this because we've got our good friend, Nate Sidwell. Nate, you play in our staff D&D game.
I do, yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. So we're going to start with our question that we usually start with our guests, and just to ask you, what is your D&D story or your RPG story? How did we get started? Do you have a favorite character? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I started late in actually playing D&D, but it goes way back. I started reading fantasy fiction when I was a late teenager and fell in love with the Dragonlance series, and then I delved into the Forgotten Realms series and read all the trilogies are called, but you know, the Dritz Durden, or however you say that, the Dark Drow series, you know, Sojourn and Homeland and all those, and the used to be called the Icewind Dale trilogy, right, with 10 Towns and Icewind Dale and then all that. I'd love that, you know, so that ventured into more fantasy fiction, and, you know, I've always been an avid reader, and my friends played when I was younger. I just never got into it, and I was probably a little reluctant, you know. I didn't feel comfortable improvising, things like that, so it was cool to discover as an adult with you guys, ultimately, you know, playing, being invited to join you and having you guys helping me out, you know, it was a cool thing. So my story is kind of really just beginning. I feel like we've got two campaigns going, and I've created two characters, and I'm having a blast. But I've learned a lot, you know, DMing for my class, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's been super cool, too.
So that kind of leads us into, you know, the main reason. I mean, we would interview you anyway because you're our friend, good, cool guy. But you also are engaged in something that's right in the wheelhouse of Teachers in the Dungeon, so mm-hmm. the intersection of education and role-playing games.
Yeah.
So you've told us that you are using Dungeons & Dragons in your advanced French classes.
Correct.
So could you tell us a little bit about how that came about? How did you decide to
Sure.
Make that connection.
Well, I got the idea my family plays games. You know, we play board games all the time. On vacation, that's pretty much all we do in the evenings and things. We played a murder mystery on vacation one night, and it was like 2 hours of reading together and you know, this file, you know, this crime file full of, you know, photos and police reports and maps with, you know, where all the things took place, where the murder took place. And I was like, wow, this would be amazing for class. You know, the kids would have to read all this, and we just have to expand it into a longer form. So I tried that, and it went really well. I made copies for the kids, and we had fun reading it for a couple weeks, and, you know, they were super engaged. So I was like, this is really cool. You know, I'm onto something here. So I continue to do that. I have a few of those now. That led me into thinking, wow, what if we could... When I did that, I made them play as investigators. So I pretended to be like the lead investigator, and I had the table set in a U, and the kids came in, and there was like on the smart board, there was like a big seal of the government agency and nice. Stuff, you know, and their files were all sitting there, and I made it like a briefing for a meeting, you know, and I thought, wow, there's something to this, you know, there's something to it when they're really a part of the story. So that led me to exploring other options, and I finally realized, wow, I could just get one of these starter sets from D&D and try that. And as soon as I bought it and started reading it, I'm like, oh, I could see it all came together, and I could see how it would work. So
how does it work?
Well, it's a fairly complicated thing, but I'll try to streamline it. First of all, I want to set the tone for, like, we have a sort of non-traditional style of delivering foreign language education, okay? It's called TPRS, and which means teaching proficiency through reading and storytelling. And that was developed by Blaine Ray back in a long time ago, 80s and 90s. But it's all founded on the research of Dr. Stephen Krashen. And his main thing was called comprehensible input. So we want to give the kids input that is just above their learning level. So they are constantly learning things, but they're in a comfortable zone of meaning, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning is the key to it. So when we start, you know, at French 1, we train them in how to do these things. So we start with a word wall, and then they learn 3 words a day. And then the next day they will learn 3 more words. And with those words, we learn actions. We learn an action to sort of attach meaning to it. And then the next day we learn 3 more words, and the next day, and we act them out in front of the class every day, and we keep compounding it. So we learn all the words every day, you know? And so the first words that we learn, they get hundreds of times by the end of this, you know, multi-month process. We do that till about Christmas, the word wall. With those words, we take those words and we whittle them into stories in a couple of weeks. And we tell short, brief stories where the kids are making up the characters, the kids are... They're deciding what the characters in the story will be, you know, but they're very simple half-page stories. And then the kids read them, and we retell them, and we do questions with them and all these things, right? So it's a non-traditional approach that teaches the kids to acquire the language in a natural way. Okay. And it really works. I've been teaching for 20 years almost, and I did half my career in the sort of traditional grammar book sense, and then we've been doing this since 2014, so for about 10 years. And the difference is huge. It's more fun for me. It's more fun for the kids. And the kids are better speakers. So that being said, when I got the starter set, I have the original or the penultimate starter set, the 2014 one. It's called Lost Mine of Fandelver. And so I got that in English. And then I got it in French. So I had... the hard copy in French. Then I found a PDF in French. So it would save me work, because what I want them to do is to read, right?
Right.
That's what we want them to do. So all of the DM prompts, you know, in the guidebook, all of those prompts I want them to see when they come up. We basically slow it down, right? Our sessions, like we started a couple weeks ago, and we've, except for the interruptions and testing, we've been doing a session every day, you know, so we get about 40 minutes a day, and we don't accomplish a lot because we got to set up, we got to, you know, but But we do accomplish a lot in language, and the kids are super engaged, right? So anyway, I found these PDF files so I could basically snip those DM prompts, the little things you read to the to the adventurers to set the scene or to get them going. And I put them in a presentation, and I put them in a Google document that I could print, you know, and so I print them out a copy, and then we have it on a presentation in front of the class. And we go through vocabulary. Before we do anything, we pause, and we go through the vocabulary from this particular little snippet of reading, the DM prompt, and we say them out loud, and we talk about them. And so the kids see them, they activate their, you know, their former knowledge. So when they read it, they know what it is. You know? So anything new is in there is put on the vocab list. So,
not to interrupt you, just out of curiosity, in those prompts, how much vocabulary are you able to like glean out of that for your classes?
There's quite a bit. Most of them have probably 10 to 15 words, which is ideal. You don't want to give them 50, right? But you don't want to have three either, you know? It's because you want that comprehensible input level where it's just above there.
So it has a nice balance.
It's pretty good. That's
amazing.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Yeah.
But is it all vocab like sword and pierce and...
Some of it is, yes. Some of it is sort of seemingly, you know, impractical.
So, or like gaming jargon.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of that, but I found that there's a lot of the useful stuff too, like crawl and sneak and, you know, go quietly or... you know, hundreds of words that are repeated over and over again. So, you know, I don't keep putting them on the vocab list, but they keep coming up, you know.
Okay.
And then the kids know them after a time, you know, which is kind of the point. So that's what we do. We read it, and then I say, qu'est-ce que vous allez faire? What are you going to do, right? This is for a French 3 and 4 class that is combined. There's only 8 kids in there, so it's an ideal situation, you know, for this. And I say, what are you going to do, right? And then we give them a moment to process, and they can think about what they're going to say in French, or they can, you know, think about what they're going to say generally. And usually somebody comes up with something pretty quickly, and we go from there.
So when they do the planning, is the requirement of this class to be 100% language, French?
No. It is not. I mean, that would be an ideal goal with, you know, perfect students and in perfect situations. But no, we are shooting for, you know, let's stay in French as much as we can. But we do clarify in English. We do.
Okay.
It always depends on the level of your students and the material at hand, ultimately, you know. But for the most part, we try to stay in French, probably 70%, I would guess, you know. And, you know, they're learning... currently, even with a few sessions under the belt, most of them are still learning how the mechanics of the game work. And, you know, I'm thankful that I have a couple. Well, the fours did it last year, too. So they experienced it, and now they're helping the threes.
It's pretty
cooperative. It's super cool.
With that growth, you know, you always have students. Now you'll always have students who have played in the class.
Yeah,
and so you'll have them as mentors and whatnot. So now I'm going to go off of my experience working with one of your students. So your character sheets are in French.
Yes, they are.
And they filled it out in French.
Yes.
And so one day one of your students was in here and he goes, Mr. Gross, you play Dungeons and Dragons, right? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I said, I'm trying to fill out this character sheet. And I was wondering if you could help me out. And I said, yeah, sure. And I came over and says, can you tell me what this part of the sheet would be? And I looked at it and I was like, what is this I'm looking at? And I was like, oh, this is your class. He's trying to get me to tell him what. And so I said, here's what I'll do for you. I said, I know this is for class. You really need to be figuring this out yourself.
Yeah.
But I'll say that box right there. And I wish I could remember exactly what box is. So I'll use this as the example. I said something along the lines of that box would be money. So can you figure out what words those mean that are money?
Yeah.
And you know, the currency of the game. And so they worked with that a little bit, and I think they got it.
Right.
I'm assuming they got it eventually, but I thought that was really cool that they're taking this game and breaking it down and learning the language as they're building their character, even.
Yeah, it is.
Some key terms.
It is cool. We spent about a week just reading and prepping our characters, and they had they had access to both the player's handbook in English and the player's handbook in French. So, and they were expected to do it in French. So they could read both for speed, but then they had to go to the French and like put things in and break it out. They had to write a background story for their character in French. So that's one way we kind of build it and assess it, you know. When you said that, it made me think of like, we're not super worried about like all the details being perfect in French. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about that. It's about the kid, where he's at and getting better, you know, just a little bit every day. That's all it is, you know. And if they're engaged and they're having fun doing it, it's working, you know. So,
right. Random question. Do you refer to the dice as le dé huit, le dé dix?
Yes. How
do
you? Yeah, dé dix, dé vingt.
Okay.
Le dice, oui. The die.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that works out quite well because we say D20, the letter D in French is dé anyway, but dé also means die or dice.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm left out of this one because sorry, Nate, I took French in high school, but that was a long time ago.
we won't do the math.
So I have a couple questions. I want to start by asking about resources. How difficult, you mentioned that there's a player's handbook in French, you found some PDFs that are in French, and the starter set in French.
Yeah.
So how hard was that to find?
Well, the PDFs were a little challenging. That was a challenge, but the hard copy of the things was fairly easy with Amazon. I just went to amazon.fr and I bit the bullet on the shipping. You know, it was like $50 shipping or whatever, but it was expensive shipping.
Yeah.
And, you know, to get the hard copy was fairly easy.
The other question I had was more in class. Do you have any students that are super reticent? They don't want to play, or they're like, I'm not comfortable playing this game.
Yes, we played last year, and one of the girls didn't love it. I could tell, you know. I mean, she was always a little bit more shy, but more timid, or just more, you know, quiet. You know, and I remember how I felt when I was a kid. You know, and I can imagine. I wouldn't have been super comfortable either in certain situations, you know. So this year when she's back, and I gave her options, so she is keeping she doesn't play, but she's keeping a everyday summary in French of what we do, and she's like our dictionary person. If we need help looking something up, she's got her Chromebook ready. And
oh, nice.
So she's engaged. She's part of the class, but she's not. She's just not playing the character because it's not her thing. So, and I've thought of other ways to do that too. I thought, you know, you could have a person video, or you could have a person, you know, like maybe make like a documentary of your adventure or something. That would be super cool. You know, like there's other things you could do that maybe the kid doesn't want to play, but they could still be a part of it and still have
sketch artist.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I was even thinking like a photo journal.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, they take the pictures, but then they put it into like a journal format and they have to write the captions of the pictures and maybe little summaries of each picture in French,
right?
And put together like a journal. That'd be that might be kind of cool too. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think that's really cool. I always get that question when I talk to people about, you know, doing RPGs or doing game club with RPGs and things, and people are like, well, if they're in a class, do they have to play? And I said, well, I mean, yes, it's part of the class, but there are options if students feel uncomfortable playing or disagree with the content or something like that. That there's always extra things that they could do.
Sure.
So I love those ideas.
Yeah. I haven't tried it with a bigger class. You know, I think in that case you'd have to break it into groups and have competent veteran players lead the groups and sort of just bounce between them or something.
Right.
You know, I think that could be functional as well, but I haven't tried it yet, so...
Has word gotten out that French is the class to take if you like RPGs?
I'd like to think so, but I don't know. I do try to promote it that way, like with my French ones and my French twos. I'm like, hey, we're playing D&D right now, you know. And there's a few people that piques their interest, I think, but some of them are like, I think some of them don't know what to think of that. You know, they're not familiar with it.
Yeah,
right. And it might scare them a little because they're like, oh, I know, you know, they have misconceptions or something. So. I think it might help eventually. I think it will catch on.
Yeah. I think something for a future conversation is what happens when that class does get large. And you have, we remember at GaryCon the first year, we had a conversation about that. Mm-hmm. And like the suggestion, the thought that I came to my mind was the Socratic seminar type of idea where you have a core set of players that are in front. So you got five characters playing, and then they have somebody who is shadowing them and listening.
That's cool.
They can collaborate. They could tap out and let the other one jump in and play.
That's cool.
So, you know, I still, a class of 30, I just don't know that would work exactly.
They could strategize.
When you get into, the low ideas. Teens. Yeah. So it's, and they could, and they strategize, they could caucus.
Yeah.
They could caucus as a player, as a character, as well as,
looking up secret tricks. And,
So I always thought that might be kind of a cool way to do that.
So I don't know if we're wrapping up quite yet, but as we're kind of getting into the back half of this, can you tell us a little bit about any memorable successes or challenges, or both, that have occurred so far as you've implemented this in class?
Yeah. The other day, we were entering a castle, and there's eight of them, right? So, they're not veteran players, right? So I'm like, how are you entering? You know, come on, you know, because they're just like, we're going to go in, you know? And I'm like, well, you might want to be a little careful. You know, I'm trying to train them as we go, you know? But I didn't say that, of course, but, you know, how? One of the veteran, you know, from last year players knew that she had helped this other girl create her druid character. And she knew that she had some spells. And she was like, you could cast invisibility and we could all touch each other, you know, or we could all walk around you and we could sneak in. And then they decided to do that. And I let it happen. And I was impressed. And she did most of it in French. She did a pretty darn good job of delivering it in French. So I gave her some inspiration and like, everybody was like, that was a great idea, you know? Because, but it sort of, they missed half of the combat in the castle because of, they were just quietly going through, you know, it was pretty nice. Great. Yeah. So that was memorable. There's been a lot of moments. For me, it's all the smaller stuff, you know, like all the, oh, he said this and, you know, he tried to say it this way, you know, and a couple of them are doing awesome. They just are all French, you know, the older kids. But I can see some of the others coming out a little bit more, you know, as we go and as they get more comfortable. And that's super cool to see.
Do you ever see moments where, this might be overstated, but they kind of forget for a little bit that they're using French? Like they're so into the story that they...
Yeah, I think I've seen that. Yeah, a little bit, yeah. That's pretty cool when that happens, yeah.
I was going to say it. Immersive.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Immersive when you forget about... you know, the work that goes into it.
Right.
Because you're just having so much fun playing.
Yeah, that's kind of the goal, right? Yeah.
So, okay, here's a question for you. How do you grade this?
Yeah. Yeah, that's, generally speaking, grading in our class is a challenge. But it's, I think we got a good rep. We have a, you know, as a department, our whole department does this. Not the games, but the TPRS, we have a good way of doing it. And there's a few ways we do it. But one of the things is our assessments are pretty much recognition-based. We want them to see it and recognize it and know it that way. It's not necessarily you have to produce that much, right? Mm-hmm. And then as we get into 3 and 4, then the production starts going up a little bit. But it's still not, like you're expected to just know French, right? Because they've only had, you know, like 120 hours of French each year, you know, like it's not really that much, you know, if you do the math, that's like three weeks of full-time work, you know, that's nothing when with the language, you know, so when we do an assessment, we're still giving them input. It's like we're making them read more essentially, right? So, or listen more. So most of our assessments are oral quizzes, generally speaking, they're oral quizzes with like 10 statements about the story.
Oh, okay.
And they're you say we or no, yes or no, or they're essentially true or false, right? Mm-hmm. So we say true statements about the story and false statements about the story, change something from it, you know, and they say yes or no. So I continue that and do the same things once or twice a week from the adventures that we've done or the, you know, if we wrote a summary. Sometimes we write a summary of like yesterday's for our question of the day. You know, mm-hmm. Write what happened yesterday in the story or in our adventure. So they do have some output. They're doing some writing. We might, like, when we're done, I'm going to have them write a complete summary of our adventure. So they have to go back and retell the whole story. And then we'll do it. Then we'll do it as a class because, you know, theirs will be not perfect.
Sure.
But mm-hmm. then we can tweak it and make all the, mm-hmm. they can, everybody can give a good element or two.
Cool.
So that's pretty cool. And then, like, we do with, like, the written backstories and the recaps. So those are sort of written narratives, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, the only production is writing and the speaking they do during class, of course.
That's cool.
So, yes, it was. We were excited to talk to you anyway about this, but I know as we have dug into, you know, RPGs in education, mm-hmm. I mean, I'll be blunt. I'm sort of the heretic because at the high school level, I think it's very tough to integrate RPGs into the classroom in a way that is efficient and is the best use of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I can see it in a... In a creative writing class very easily.
Yeah.
But I think this is such a natural fit with language because you just need to be using language. And if this is an excellent tool to get them emotionally invested and decide, you know, and almost forget because they're so focused on the goal
mm-hmm.
of being able to get this player or this character somewhere safe. That's high motivation
it
to
is.
Use that French. And,
yeah, it's perfect. It's really perfect. And I'm trying to get others on board, you know, in our department. But I think there's a sort of natural, you got to be interested in it to want to do it. You know?
Yeah,
it's,
sure.
Because it's a lot of work, too. I spent a lot of hours prepping all this stuff, you know, so.
That is very true. I think you have to have, I mean, it's a long process, I think, to build up the natural teacher interest to be willing to use this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very front-loaded, and you and I had kind of talked a little bit about that, but have you found in this being, this is your second year doing it, or is it third?
It's my second year.
Second year doing it. Do you find that some things you're like, oh, this is already done, and this is already done?
Yes.
And so you see that as the more years you put into it, the heavy lifting moves from you to the students.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
As I sit now, I'm just finishing that adventure in preparation. I'm finishing up the last vocabulary lists and you know, DM notes and stuff. Because I need to prep what I say, you know what I mean? So,
because mm-hmm.
right.
It's really hard to improvise in French and maintain all the
hard
mechanics and everything.
Yeah,
you know what
right.
I mean? So, and to keep everybody on track, it's there's a lot going on. I'm juggling
mm-hmm.
10 things at the same time. So
yeah.
I need to prep as much as I can. But I got all that almost done for that original adventure, you know, all four parts
mm-hmm.
of it. So... when we're done, and we're going to probably finish it this year,
mm-hmm.
I'll have that. It'll be in the can, and I can use it again,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be way better at it, you know?
Yeah.
And then I can start doing something else, so.
I was going to say, you get to a point where the kids are cycling through. If you had three adventures built,
yeah.
Then you would probably, unless you get bored with it,
right.
You would never have to, you know, you always tweak here and there, but
mm-hmm.
you'd never have to rebuild a, could you do it in two?
You could probably do it in two. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you could, yeah, the way we're sitting is the fours now will finish
mm-hmm.
and the threes will have done it. So we're going to have to either carry that on or start a new one next year.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So.
Hmm.
Wow. This is really cool. I know, I knew you were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And because you and I had talked a little bit and then things got quiet and you were just working. I hear now that you were just working on it. And then, I don't know, just last week or so, I'd asked you how it was going, and you just went into all this detail about stuff that I was like, holy cow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
The thing that I liked the most was how you pulled vocabulary out of there. To me, as an English teacher, you know, I think that's huge. If the kids
mm-hmm.
don't know the vocabulary, how can they communicate in this instance?
Yeah.
But how can they also understand what they're doing? So the fact that you are drawing that vocabulary out of there for them, I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've only done it for 2 years now, and I'm starting to realize, okay, I could do things better, you know? So I think I'm going to try to do like a word wall
mm-hmm.
with, because I have a general vocab packet that's sort of like everything, you know,
mm-hmm.
like how to rolling and all the generic attack words and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking I can put that in like a word wall and we can practice it every day real quick before we start. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
Just spend 5 minutes learning words every day and it'll pay off big time in the
right.
long run, you know? So that's something I want to do.
I could see, you know, shifting a little bit toward homebrew to be able to create scenarios if there's particular areas of vocab that have been neglected.
Yeah, okay.
You could sort of change the setting or alter it somehow to be able to get some of that in.
Yeah.
Probably without too much trouble.
Yeah, that's cool. Like you could do a, you know, foods or something or traveling or ship stuff or something.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
like, all sorts of things you could do. Right?
They're forced to leave all their armor and weapons outside the tavern and all they have is food to throw.
That would be fun. Yeah.
So as we're wrapping up, I have to ask this question. Tell us about some of the characters that the kids have created.
I'm
sure that some of these are going to be fun.
Well, where to start? We got a drow monk.
Okay.
And his name is Alistair, and he's kind of a, you know, martial artist guy, and he's helpful with the, you know, the dark vision and all that, right?
Oh,
the sneaking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have a barbarian dwarf named Rongrim, who is our death dealer. Right? He's the one that finishes
that
all
French.
The fights. Rongrim. It's pretty good. And he's coming through because we have a couple of druids. We have a gnome druid named Ice Spice, which I didn't know was a real artist, you know, until we started playing, and I was like, okay, I'm going to have to refine my requirements. I didn't realize I had to, like, be lawyerly in my requirements for, you know, fun, creative names. But there's a gnome. No, I'm sorry. The Ice Spice is not she's a human. There's a gnome druid that's named Gnomeo.
Appropriate.
Yes. So there's a person named Ovac, a half orc druid, which is interesting. They come up with some cool stuff.
Right.
So what advice would you give to a teacher who's kind of this sort of piqued an interest and they're moving into this?
I would say give it a try. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, hopefully you're in a place that you can do such a thing. You know, you have the freedom to do that. I'm the only French teacher in my school, which is amazing because I'm like an island that can experiment and do anything I like. And I know a lot of people don't have that. That luxury, but you know, if you can do it, give it a try. Spend a couple weeks and do a really small, you know, a small adventure. You can find a little one-off campaign, do that. You know, there's not a lot out there to help people do this. There's some research out there that people have done over the years supporting this, but there's not a lot to help teachers. So I've been writing a, you know, something like a book or a helpful, you know, document that I could share with people.
Nice.
In the future, we'll see. But you know, it's using role playing games in the TPRS classroom. So
nice.
You know, I would just say go for it, and you know, we have all the tools already. We already do the things. Just apply it to this really cool world of, you know, of adventure. And the beauty of it is there's so many other types of role-playing games. You could do anything. You could make a Paris role-playing game if you wanted to,
right.
You know, or you know, just wander around any place.
So I get the question I want to ask that might ease people's their just hesitation when you say just do it is, how closely do you follow the rules? Do you allow some theater of the mind and reward like creative thinking even though it goes against rules?
For sure, because honestly, you know, I mean, I don't know every rule, and I rely on my students to help me out. I call myself the story master, you know. So we are just shaping a story together, and that's the important part, you know. Mm-hmm. The you know, I don't want to break any massive rules of the game or, like, you know, change the story so much that it's not cool.
Sure.
But I like to, you know, keep it in the reality zone. I'm definitely open to creative and, you know, letting things happen as they happen. So.
Flexibility is the rule.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So just do it, because the kids will love it, whatever, you know, the kids will love it if they're telling a story.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And that's the joy of storytelling.
Yeah.
Is the fun of doing it. And when you do it with a class or a group of people.
I would think most teachers worth their salt change the rules as necessary in lots of areas of the class. And I don't mean like you're going to get in trouble, but you know, you've got the plan for how the lesson's going to go and it goes in a different direction and you just follow it.
You do it. Yeah.
It's the same skill.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, awesome. Nate, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Teachers in the Dungeon.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll put some of the resources you talked about on the show notes.
Yeah.
And any final thoughts, Dan?
No. It's just exciting to kind of hear about and glad to see that, I mean, this is such a powerful use of RPGs.
Yeah. Well, so if you're listening and you have questions for Nate, we see Nate pretty often, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you could send some questions our way, teachersinthedungeon@gmail.com. If you want to know more or get some more detailed, or I don't know, maybe you'd even be willing to speak with somebody if they had questions.
Yeah.
And so let us know. Send us an email and ask those questions. But until next time, keep
rolling.
No! En français, s'il vous plaît.
Continuez de rouler les dés.
Excellent.
Perfect.
Excellent.
See you next time, folks.
Oh, I thought we were done.
Now we are.
That wraps up today's session. So thank you for listening to Teachers in the Dungeon. We appreciate you and your feedback. Until the next time we see you in the dungeon, we hope you roll high on those saving throws. If you enjoyed the show and want to hear what happens in the adventure, subscribe to the podcast. Have questions, thoughts, or ideas? Check the show notes for our website and our contact information. This podcast is not affiliated or endorsed by Wizards of the Coast, Hasbro, or any other third-party Dungeons & Dragons entity. Teachers in the Dungeon is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders in the U.S. or abroad. The official Dungeons & Dragons website can be found at www.dnd.wizards.com.